This is not a chance occurrence. On the outer planes, this gathering began by all of your individual journeys. And as often happens at the beginning of Sufi gatherings, by eating together, by being together. And an important part of this gathering is just being together. Just being ourselves for his sake, for the sake of our beloved, for the sake of the one to whom we belong, the one who owns our breath. There is something very special when Sufis come together for his sake, for the sake of the love that is unlimited. The wine that comes before the creation of the vine. This pure, pure essence of love to which we all have access, but which has been forgotten so much in the West. It is a very, very, very pure essence. And through that essence, many things can take place. We know how that essence can make the mystery of the heart become tangible to us. This extraordinary mystery of being a human being. And human beings, as you all know, are multidimensional beings. We do not just exist on one plane of reality, even though for many of us we have forgotten that. And part of our spiritual work is to remember, is to reconnect ourselves with all the levels of light and love that exist within us. And we do this individually in our own practice, whether through prayer, through meditation, whatever draws us to God, whatever way the heart vibrates with God, with Allah. The work now is to bring it into more of a public arena, to bring it even out of the closed circle of our own individual orders, of our own individual groups. So that that love, that wine of remembrance, can flow. Can be shared. So there can be a collective remembrance of Allah, of our beloved. Not just an individual remembrance within the heart, but a collective remembrance, because our culture has forgotten its beloved, our beloved, has forgotten Allah, has forgotten to whom it belongs. It has been busy with so many other things over the years, over the centuries. We live in a world that is starved for remembrance, that is immersed in forgetfulness to such a degree it has even forgotten that it has forgotten. And Sufis, we have always been bringers of light and love. That has been our work over the centuries, from small groups gathering in the desert to tekkas in the cities. Wherever there is a need, there we are called together. To bring his love, his remembrance into our lives and beyond our own lives, into the marketplace, into the fields, wherever that divine substance is needed. And it is not an easy work because there is, as I say, this cloud of forgetfulness that covers the West. That is almost painful. The angels almost cry. We have forgotten as a culture what it means to belong to God. We have to try to find it in a bookshop rather than breathe it in the air. There were cultures before where it was the most natural thing in the world. where when a young child had a certain dream, his parents would take him to the shaman, to the holy man, to the prophet, to the wherever it was needed, and it would be understood. The vision would be understood. That potential in the child will be recognized. And how many of us have had to struggle to reclaim our own remembrance, to reclaim the fact that we belong to God. And it is enough, friends. Why not put back into the collective this remembrance, this belonging, this knowledge? Not just to keep it for ourselves. Not just even to share it among those with whom we are together. But to give it back where it is needed. Where there is this unbearable hunger. Where there is this starvation. We live in the most, in the richest, materially richest culture in the world. That is starving, whose soul is crying. And that is one of the reasons when we come together as lovers of God, we can make a real contribution. We can be in service to our beloved. You see, friends, the help is always there on the inner planes. The friends of God are always with us. The masters of the past, the elders, are there, just beyond the horizon and within our hearts. But we need to collectively claim that heritage. To acknowledge to whom we belong, and to bring that help, that sustenance, here. Because it is real. It is more real than all the images, all the illusions that our culture throws in our face, all the things that are advertised, all the dreams that are promised. That is real. We know it in our own hearts. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We know what it means to feel His love within our hearts. Like Rabia said, somebody said to Rabia, "If I renounce the world and turn towards God, will He turn towards me?" And she said, "No, never. First, He has to look at you. First, He has to touch your heart. Then you can turn towards Him. It is all by the grace of Allah. It is all by His grace. And we have each been touched somewhere, otherwise we wouldn't be here. We know what it means. But often, we keep it for ourselves. Even more so when we live in this world that doesn't resonate to the call. And the wonderful thing of belonging to a Sufi group, to a tariqah, to a tradition, is we are in a safe place, a haven, where we can share that remembrance among friends, where we can feel the alignment with those who also know what it is to have their hearts touched. As Rumi said, to be with those who mix with God as honey blends with milk, with those who say, whatever comes and goes, whatever rises and sets is not what I love. We know that. We have experienced that, but there is another greater need that draws us together now. Which is to give that love back to life itself. To give it back to the whole. And there is a way to do it. Why? Because Sufis have access to the whole. Because we come from the whole. We belong to oneness. For the Sufi, there is nothing other than oneness. The unity of God, that stamp is in our hearts. And so we can have, as a group, as a collective, direct access to the oneness of the world. It goes from heart to heart. This is the ancient Sufi tradition. This is how teachings have always been given, from heart to heart, from soul to soul. Because it's the heart that knows the secrets of Allah. And it is the heart that can communicate those secrets. And traditionally, this has been done from individual to individual. From teacher to disciple, across the centuries. But there is a way to give it directly to the heart of the world, directly to the whole of humanity. If we come together, crossing all boundaries, all borders, celebrating this oneness that knows no limits, because in oneness everything is contained, everything is combined. Now that seed of this gathering is already present. It is there. It is a spinning circle of light. It has been given to us to work with through the grace of our superiors, through the elders of the tradition, of the different orders that have come together to celebrate His oneness. This is not a gathering to get anything, but to give. But in order to do this work, there has to be a certain alignment. In the Sufi tradition, this is known as adab, a certain attitude that is required for the work that has to be done. Each order has its own individual etiquette. But there is also the adab of the heart, the adab of the soul, which in its most essential nature is how the soul bows down before God. And how the soul is lived in the midst of everyday life. And for the Sufi, this of course has to do with witnessing, has to do with remembrance, and has to do with attention. And there are many ways to live this attention. With the breath, with the name of God, with the attitude towards friends. And what matters here is your participation. We are here to help you, but it is for you to make this gathering happen, to make it work as a living organism of light and love that can exist after we have gone. This is very important. This gathering, if it works, if the inner and outer come together in the right way, it will remain. You see, we are as a culture so caught up in time and place, you think, well, where will it remain? Here? No, when we go, when we leave, and a youth group comes here, it won't be here. Because Sufis are not limited to time and space. They work with the heart, and the heart belongs to God, and the heart does not know the limitation of time and space. For the heart, there is only the eternal moment, and that eternal moment is where it is needed. We have forgotten as a culture how to work with the inner world, how to work consciously with the flows of love that come into the world and go where they are needed. But as a group, as a gathering, we can help this to happen. If we are present, and we are present in our hearts and in our minds, we are present in remembrance of Allah. And more than that, we bring it into this plane, into the physical, into our being together. Our being together, all you people who have made such an effort to travel, some from far places, some from Australia, some from Chapel Hill, it doesn't matter where, you have made an effort to be here. Some of you are jet-lagged, some of you are tired. You have made a physical effort to be here, and that is significant. Because it means we exist together on this plane from different places. And that is the outer arena of the work that is to be done. I tell you a dream somebody had about this gathering. They had it a few weeks ago. Beings of light are hard at work at a kind of creation which was out of pure light, like a very fine structure of threads of light. It is very beautiful and perfect somehow, and being done very well, it feels that nothing is missing. It is just perfect. But although it seems real and also whole and complete, there is something that is missing, something else, a kind of reflection, like a blueprint for something that is not yet here. And a feeling in my heart comes together with a thought that what I am shown is being done by those beings of light, but our part is not yet done, which has to do with a physical quality, living this, giving this structure of light a more physical quality. We are beings of light, and we have also a physical body. When you see a human being on the inner planes, they are so beautiful. We are made of light somewhere. And we also have a physical body. As we get older, we get stiff, we get aches and pains. And we can bring the inner and outer together. But for this, as I say, a certain adab is necessary. Kabir wrote something very beautiful in his book, The Knowing Heart. He said, about adab, he said, the circle of lovers is learning to manifest the reality of oneness, the reality of brotherhood, sisterhood, friendship. I will repeat that because I think it is like a saying for this gathering and for the adab, the attitude that we can carry both in our hearts and in our minds over the next few days. The circle of lovers, and that is us, we are the circle of lovers. The circle of lovers is learning to manifest the reality of oneness, to bring it through the planes into the plane of manifestation, from the outer, from the inner to the outer, to manifest the reality of oneness. That is why it is so precious that different Sufi orders come together to embrace this oneness, to celebrate this oneness, to live this oneness, to breathe this oneness. It has more significance than most of you are aware. It enables something totally different to happen. It enables a whole other dimension to come into play. A whole other frequency of love is then given access to this plane. And he goes on, the reality of brotherhood, sisterhood, friendship. And this precious quality we have of being together as friends, in the company of friends. And that is really all I have to say, except enjoy it. If it isn't fun, don't bother. If it's too serious, it's pretentious. How do you notice a good Sufi gathering? There is laughter, a little bit of drunkenness in the air, a little bit of craziness. It doesn't work if you try too hard. Then it becomes an exercise. Then there is no joy. Then there is no celebration. Then there is no real witnessing. Our beloved is a crazy beloved. He turns our own worlds upside down again and again. He is the ultimate trickster, and we are his idiots. So please, enjoy yourself. If you have complaints, there are people with yellow badges who are happy to to try to resolve your complaints. And just remember, friends, we are together for his sake, for the sake of our beloved, for the sake of the one who has stamped his name into our heart of hearts. That is why we are here.
Thank you, Llewellyn.
Thank you for bringing us here and for the Golden Sufi Center organization. Thank you.
Can I say one thing, please? No clapping ever in this conference because it destroys a certain vibration that is built up. Sorry.
I'd like to begin with a blessing of Rumi's, at least as well as I can remember it. Almighty God, bless those who lead and those who follow. Bless those who keep their vows and those who try to keep them. By your great mercy and generosity, O you who are the most forgiving of those who forgive, O you who are the most generous of those who give, by your great majesty and beauty. Amen. So let's begin with some of the ecstatic utterances of Rumi. Where is my donkey? Has anybody seen my donkey? Oh, that's right. My donkey died last year. And he took a lot of my headaches with him. God be praised. If my cow also goes, well, let her go. I won't be sad. I've smelled nothing beautiful from that cow or her belly. Let the cow and the donkey go. And in the two worlds, let there be forever my beloved, my beloved, my beloved. My donkey, you know, wore a ring in his ear. What do you think of a golden ring in a donkey's ear? What a waste of good gold. He was impatient and stubborn, ignoring me and refusing his barley. The only service he left at my door was a pile of, you know what. There's one cow up in the sky and another under the ground. I'd like to leap beyond them both. The other day, I went to the donkey dealer and looked around. But I'm getting fed up with donkeys and the slaves of donkeys. Someone said, your donkey died. Here's a good one you can buy. I said, no thanks. I don't need another donkey blocking my way. So, Rumi, our master, most popular poet in North America in recent years, who is he and what does he have to share with us? What really is his message? Maybe tonight, in his words and in the little bit of silence we might allow for these words to be received, maybe we can ask and open our hearts, what is he really telling us? Because we are Americans, we do some interesting things with Rumi, with the sacred traditions. God help us if we turn the search for God. God help us if we turn it into another narcissistic search for ecstasy. God help us if we turn the spiritual search and just to another form of our own self-gratification. But I know I don't need to tell you this. I'm reminding myself. I am one of those who wish to follow a way, and I am one who wishes to keep my vows. So, what is it that Rumi is talking about on every page that he ever wrote? Because I'd suggest that it's really the same subject on every page. There's only that one theme. I dare not say what it is, but maybe you can hear it for yourself. The intellectual is always showing off. The lover is always getting lost. The intellectual runs away afraid of drowning. But the whole business of love is to drown in the ocean. Intellectuals carefully plan their vacations. Lovers are ashamed to rest. The lover is always alone, even surrounded with people, like water and oil. She or he remains apart. And the one who goes to the trouble of giving advice to a lover gets nothing. He's mocked by passion. Love, it's like musk. It attracts attention. Love is a tree, and lovers are its shade. The subject of passion is an interesting one, because in our own culture, to the extent that we've gotten removed from natural life and we've created an artificial world for ourselves in so many ways, there's a longing for ecstasy. It's our natural right to have that ecstasy, despite what I said a minute ago. I'm only suggesting, and Rumi is suggesting, that seeking ecstasy is not the spiritual path. Ecstasy in our tradition is called wajd. It means finding or being found. But like so many of the things we long for in this life, like happiness or joy, we don't necessarily receive those things by going directly for them. This is called the war inside. Rest your cheek for a moment on this drunken cheek. Let me forget the war and cruelty inside myself and in the outside world. I hold these few cheap coins in my hand. Give me your wine of golden light. You have opened the seven doors of heaven. Now lay your hand generously on my tightened heart. All I have to offer is this illusion, myself. Give it a nickname, at least, that is real. Only you can restore what you have broken. Help my broken head. I'm not asking for some sweet pistachio candy, but for your everlasting love. 50 times I've said, heart, stop hunting and step into this net. Surrender. How do we surrender? Sufism is described in the last few lines of this poem that I'm going to read. True spirituality, that is. I don't mean to put a label on it or limit it to Sufism. True spirituality is, I think, referred to in the last lines of this interesting poem, which is called The Pull of Love. You know, most of you probably know Al-Hallaj. Al-Hallaj was a Sufi mystic of 11th century, I think. And he was crucified for an intoxicated utterance. Actually, there was a complex series of events and political currents around him, but the pretext for his crucifixion was that he said, I am God, or I am the truth, Anal Haq. And some Sufis said he shouldn't have ever said this. No one denied it was true, but some people said he should have kept this quiet. And some people are very proud that he spoke it. Rumi's teacher, Shems of Tabriz, said, what does I have to do with it anyway? But Mevlana pays some tribute to him, I think to make up for all that his teacher Shems said. When Hallaj found union with his beloved, it was right that it was on the gallows. By the way, they say, be careful about talking about love unless you're willing to suffer the pain of it. When Hallaj found union with his beloved, it was right that it was on the gallows. I snatched a cap's worth of cloth from his coat, and it covered my reason from head to foot. I pulled a thorn from the fence of his garden, and it has not stopped working its way into my heart. One morning, a little of his wine turned my heart into a lion hunter. It's right that this separation he made me feel lurks like a monster within my heart. Yet heaven's wild and unbroken cult was trained by the hand of his love. The reason is learned and has its due honors. It pawned its cap and robes for a cup of love. Many hearts have sought refuge from this love. But it drags and pulls us to its own refuge. It drags and pulls us to its own refuge. One cold day, a bearskin was floating down the river. I said to a man who had no clothes, "Jump in and pull it out." But the bearskin, well, you know. And the man who jumped in so eagerly was caught in the clutches of what he went to grab. "Let go of it," I said. "Fighting won't get you anywhere." "Let go of it. This coat won't let go of me." Silence. Just a hint. Who needs volumes of stories? Remember what I said? Spirituality. It's a live bear. Thank God we are in his hands and not in our own. Taksim. We are in the house of love, the house of music. Why is there always music in this house? Ask the landlord if you can find him, but he's drunk every night. And why are there sometimes idols in the Kaaba of our heart? And why God's light sometimes in an idolater's temple? Right here is a treasure this world could not contain. Both the house and its landlord, its host, are all pretext and play. Hands off this house, this talisman. Don't argue with the landlord. As I said, he's drunk every night. The garbage and trash of this house are musk and rose. The roof and door are music and verse. In short, whoever finds his way to this house is ruler of the world, Solomon of his time. Look down, O Lord, from the roof. Bless us with your glance. I swear, since seeing your face, this whole world seems a fraud and a fantasy. The world in which the garden is bewildered as to which is leaf and which is blossom, and the distracted songbirds can't tell the bird seed from the trap. But here is a house of love with no walls. a presence more beautiful than a radiant star in the evening sky, a beauty that overwhelms the mirror of the heart. Come in, friends. The Beloved is here. We are all drunk, and no one notices who enters or leaves. Don't sit outside the door in the dark, wondering. Those drunk with God, even if they are 300, live as one. But drunk with desire, even one is split in two. Enter the thicket where the lions roam, and don't be afraid of any wounds. Those shadows you fear are a child's fantasy. There is no wound and nothing to be wounded. All is mercy and love. Poem's not finished, but I'm going to pause. Give a breather to our minds. We are in this house of love, this moment. We find ourselves here, God willing. Some capacity in us to awaken, to pay attention, to notice, to listen, to open the heart has opened the door to this house and let us all enter. But now Rumi begins to give us a little bit of advice about why much of the time we're kept outside of this house of love and music, where we belong. But you keep constructing a mental barrier, like a massive wooden door. Set fire to that wood of your thought. Silence the noise of the heart. Quiet your harmful tongue. But we keep constructing a mental barrier like a massive wooden door. Set fire to that wood of your thoughts. Silence the noise of the heart. Quiet your harmful tongue. On this path of Sufism or spirituality, or call it human maturity, becoming what we as human beings are designed to be. Silence plays a beautiful role. Inner spaciousness is a prerequisite in order to allow something new to come into us. You know this. You practice this. And yet, we forget and we fill ourselves and we create that emotional noise, and we let that harmful tongue tell us its old and boring stories. Rumi was so constantly aware of and in awe of the incredible generosity and abundance and beauty of something that is beyond this apparent existence. And he was always pointing to that and saying, that which does not exist is the most important thing for us to remember. We have shown you the dust and concealed the wind, he says. We have shown you the dust but concealed the wind. So the beauty and majesty of non-existence, what he called non-existence, that which our hearts can know in a certain state, that which when we know it, we feel this profound gratitude, and we feel, we see, in a sense, this beauty in the mirror of our own hearts. That is what he reminds us of. And he proposes the possibility of a radical surrender of ourselves, and that the true intoxication, before we get to the true intoxication, let me read you what I think is a beautiful, in a sense, definition of a highly nuanced, subtle, beautiful definition of the divine. One of many possible, shall we say, pictures of the divine that Rumi paints. And I wish you could hear my wife Camille read this. Maybe some of you have, but in her absence, I will read it. It's a poem we translated together from the Mesnevi. It's called, "You are joy and we are laughter. Oh my God, our intoxicated eyes have blurred our vision." It's more than one kind of intoxication. "Our burdens have been made heavy. Forgive us." This is the state we are all in this life. Our burdens have been heavy. But forgive us. "You are hidden, and yet from east to west you have filled the world with your radiance. Your light is more magnificent than sunrise or sunset, and you are the inmost ground of consciousness, revealing the secrets we hold. You are an explosive force causing our dammed up rivers to burst forth. You whose essence is hidden while your gifts are manifest. You are like water, and we are like millstones. You are like wind, and we are like dust. The wind is hidden while the dust is plainly seen. You are the invisible spring. May, in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and we are your lush garden. You are the spirit of life, and we are like hand and foot. Spirit causes the hand to open and close. You are intelligence, and we are your voice. Your intelligence causes this tongue to speak. You are joy, and we are your laughter. For we are the result of the blessing of your joy. All our movement, everything we do, is really a continual profession of faith and bears witness to your eternal power. Just as the powerful turning of the millstone professes faith in the river's existence. Dust settles upon my head and upon my metaphors. For you are beyond anything we can ever do or say. Yet this servant can't stop trying to express your beauty in every moment. Let my soul be your carpet. So the reality of that which is addressed here is what we're here to honor, remember, and fall in love with. Because the greatest perfection for a human being is the degree of our love for God, which will reflect in our love for each other and all of this creation. And feel free to join me in the remembrance of God. Allahu, Allahu, Allahu.